Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. I'm your host, Karema Mutlu. And on today's show, we welcome Louise Yamada, who's the Managing Director of Louise Yamada Technical Research. How are you today, Louise?
I'm very well, Karim. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. Let's begin with how you began your career, Louise, and talk to us about how you first became aware of technical analysis as a tool that could be used within the financial markets. And when you started out, was technical analysis still in its infancy?
All good questions. I think that I came to technical analysis in a very roundabout way. My master in science was in early childhood education, and I was teaching nursery school. And I was left as a single parent with a 10-month-old and trying very hard to put some money together. And every time I spoke with my broker, prices went up and then they came down again. And I finally said, how do you know when to sell? And he sent me some technical analysis newsletters, and I went to the Finance Institute downtown, and Ralph Acampora, who's one of the grandfathers of technical analysis, at least of the Market Technicians Association, taught the first class and was very amusing, and really, it was a fascinating study of supply and demand and how you can track that progress through price. And the advanced class was taught by Alan Shaw in his actual office, which was like a gymnasium with walls covered with hand-done charts of all the indicators and all the relative strength work. And it was absolutely fascinating. And it turned out that he hired me out of the class. He had lost a person, and he asked me if I would like to come. So I finished the year with my children and went to Smith Barney. And really, it was a learning on the job. I had not had a financial background at all. And I think to a certain degree, it allowed me to think outside the box. And that was part of what came to the fore in the mid-90s when I wrote a couple of very major papers that made it into Barron's, and things took off from there. But it was a very roundabout way. I always like to joke and say, I think a master's in early childhood education held me in very good stead on Wall Street.
Excellent. Okay, well, throughout your career, would you say it has gotten harder to read the markets, especially with the rise of trading algorithms and quants? Would you say that trading bots have distorted, in the short term at least, the volume and price action on how to successfully read a chart and predict where it may go next? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that's a difficult question to answer. I'm not sure that I really understand completely what the algos and the bots all do, but I think that we should recognize that over the last 20 years or so, from the mid-90s to today, there are half as many stocks on the New York Stock Exchange for sale than there were back then. And the companies, of course, have been buying back, although I just noticed they're starting to not buy back as many of their own shares because the trade issues are becoming a little complex as to how their finances are going to proceed. But a lot of that has forced the market up, obviously, over the past X number of years, decade plus since the financial crisis, not to mention the liquidity that the government has been putting into place. Although currently we're sort of at a stalemate, stopped doing some of the liquidity and pulling in a little. But I could say yes, it's more difficult. Not always do the patterns that you expect follow through the way one might anticipate. But I would say that overall the principles remain the same. Consequently, simplistically, Ralph always used to say, the bigger the base, the higher in space. The bigger the top, the bigger the drop. And the bigger the drop, the longer the need for repair. Those are all relative observations. If you have a small period of distribution, you don't expect as much of a drop. If you have a small accumulation, which is the base, you don't expect as much of a rise. But if we were to look at gold today with a six-year base that's just been surpassed, then you have the potential for this to go higher.
Fantastic. Let's move on to the gold market in more detail then. And
okay.
As you mentioned, the recent breakout, how powerful is this breakout and how much longer and higher will it go? Will it go higher than people can imagine?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer, but you certainly have a six-year base in place, and it's a very beautiful saucer base off almost the low right in 2015, 2016. And the breakout through 1400 suggested that it could lift into the next resistance, which if you look back toward 2011, it hit exactly 1500, which was the support of the two-year top that took place in 2011 and 2012. So we would anticipate and recognize this is a 20% advance already, just off the lows in May. That you'd have a pause here. Could it pull back to 1450? Yes, it certainly could, and I think that would offer another buying opportunity. And if it gets through this 1500, then you have 1600. The next major resistance is 1800, and then, of course, the old high at 1900. But the size of the base does suggest, if the progression continues in a normal technical fashion, higher lows followed by higher highs, that it could equal or surpass. One of the observations of technical analysis is if the accumulation, and we would consider this six-year base the accumulation phase, in other words, evidence of demand coming in on the higher lows from 2016 to 2019, is the same size as or in excess of the prior distribution. Now, the distribution is the top from 2011 to 2012, where you had a lower high, and then finally the breakthrough support in 2013 gave you the lower low, and that's evidence of supply coming in. And if that accumulation exceeds, which it has, the size of the distribution, the argument is that price can get back to or through the high of that distribution pattern. So the potential is there, Karim, if all goes well in terms of the technical profile.
Let's go into more details about how you read a chart, Louise. For example, what are the key indicators that you look for, or do the indicators change when viewing different markets across the board? And how do you make sure to keep out confirmation bias when you're looking at the market?
Well, I think that the observations are the same across all price patterns, whether it's commodities or whether it's a stock or whether it's an index. One of the things you want to look for, obviously, in an uptrend is higher lows followed by higher highs, because that's evidence of demand. Exactly the opposite is true in a decline. You get lower highs and lower lows, and the lower highs are put in place because every rally attempt witnesses selling into strength. And what we look for in addition to those price patterns is what are the indicators under the surface doing? Are the advancing and declining issues confirming? Are the new highs versus new lows confirming? Is the volume up, down, up volume versus down volume confirming? And if it's confirming, and not all indicators speak to you all the time, so that's why we keep a good number of arrows in our quiver, so to speak, if they're confirming, then you have evidence that there should be success in the price advance. It's when they start to diverge. In other words, if the market or the price of a stock goes to a new high and the indicators do not make it to a new high and start to put in lower highs themselves, that brings in evidence of weakness under the surface. And that's important. Some of these divergences can last several months. Some of them can last several weeks. But the longer the divergences are in place, the more distrustful one becomes of the price advance. And I think to a certain degree, we've seen some of it in a few of the FANG stocks, where actually not so much in the fact that they look like they're going to new highs, but they haven't been able to achieve it yet. I mean, Apple could be one example. It's struggling here under 220, just as one example. And the momentum is relatively flat. What else do we look at? We look at momentum in the markets themselves, the Dow Jones, the S&P, the major indices. We look at them from a daily, from a weekly, and from a monthly perspective. And if you have a new high in price and the weekly momentum does not make a new high, then you have the potential that you get a pullback. It could be a minor period of consolidation. The one that we feel is more structural is the monthly MACD, which is the momentum convergence divergence. And those momentum readings for the major indices remain on the sell signals that were put in place in October, November of 2018. The S&P has come close to trying to register a buy signal, but the others have not come close enough. And we really want to wait for that confirmation. And it's something that leaves us a little bit questioning this almost two-year period of consolidation that's been in place. So we're on the fence. We're waiting and watching, and we feel the markets may be at a tipping point here while we wait for these indicators to come into place. A lot of the new highs, new lows went negative on this recent decline, even though the prices are still relatively buoyant on the rallies. It's not being reflected in some of the underlying indicators.
Very good. Okay, I think it'd be interesting to find out, Louise, some of the key authors that have helped shape your outlook on the markets. Who has made a big impact on your career, and especially in regards to the art of technical analysis? What books would you recommend?
Well, I think that the Bible of technical analysis is Edwards and McGee, Technical Analysis of Stock Trends. That's really the Bible, so to speak. It gives you all the patterns and what to expect with volume, although I must say volume has been one of the key problems here. The volume has been very low on rallies and very high on declines, and we aren't quite sure why that's been happening. Volume historically was the weapon of the bull, and you needed volume for the market to move higher. Since the 2009 bottom, it has not been the case, and that has been extremely puzzling, and that may have to do with your algorithms or the bots or whatever, or whether or not you've got a lot of, you know, blind pools that don't get registered. I really cannot answer that question, but those are all the important factors that Edwards and McGee give you in terms of the expectations. I think that's the most important. John Murphy has a couple of very good books out which are worth reading. My personal impact was really on the job training with Alan Shaw. It was fantastic. Another aspect of what we did was relative strength analysis, which we do with all the sectors still, and you can do it with individual stocks. How is your stock or your sector performing relative to the market as a whole? And obviously, you don't go into the market so that you can underperform. You go into the market so that you can outperform. If you have a broad-based portfolio and half of it's underperforming and the other half is outperforming, you're net-net, nothing. So it's helpful if you can concentrate in those sectors that are outperforming. And one of the things that is important also from a structural perspective, that's a longer-term view, even if you're a trader, is to understand where you're trading within the overall relative strength or price trend pattern. In 2007, we started to see a six-year negative divergence in the relative strength for the financial sector. The financials went to a new high, but the relative strength failed. And then it broke below the support of this six-year level. And if we had gotten, we went a call to get out of financials. If people had gotten out at that point, you would not have suffered the 80% decline in that area. So it shows you how some of the longer term work can protect you from the declines that can occur in the market. We did the same thing with energy in 2014. There was a major relative strength break of support. And the price has really, we know what the price has done since then. It has not been particularly positive. And both of those sectors have not shown enough evidence of reversal to suggest that you want large positions in them. The one that's been leading, of course, is technology. There's no question about that.
Fantastic. Okay, as we begin to wrap up, Louise, is there anything else you'd like to share with us, and how can listeners reach out to you?
Oh, that's very kind. I really, you know, there's so much to learn about technical analysis, the price patterns, the indicator patterns, the relative strength work, which I think is absolutely critical, are all things that are important or should be important to the investor as he looks at his portfolio. In terms of our work, I am semi-retired. I publish once a month now. It's a 50 or 60 page piece, which covers the U.S. markets, global markets, other markets in terms of commodities, currencies, metals, energy, interest rates. And just Google my name and it should take you to the website, and there's information there as to how to subscribe if one would like to.
Excellent. Okay, thanks for your time today, Louise. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
It's been my pleasure, Karim, and it's lovely to meet you. Thank you.
Think you understand the junior mining sector, and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people? Hit the bid.
How violent that term could be? It actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw materials. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?